Hey, hi everybody. This is Certified Life and Executive Business Coach, Dr. Nelson Beltajar, coming to you live from Toronto, Canada. And for those of you listening, I'm asking you to please buckle your seatbelts and get ready, because Aubrey is about to take you on the road to rediscovery with another great episode. Grab your favorite beverage, sit in your favorite room, sit back, relax, and enjoy.
Our lives are laid out on a road of bumps, turns, struggles, and more. How do we respond? How do we endure adversity for learning and growth? I'm Aubrey Johnson, and we'll explore these questions and more on The Road to Rediscovery. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of The Road to Rediscovery. I'm your host, Aubrey Johnson. The Road to Rediscovery is about reflecting on life lessons to learn and grow from them, and of course, pay it forward and uplift others who are struggling through dark times. Now, as you know, you can hear this show anywhere you get your podcasts, on any platform worldwide. That's right, globally. There's platforms that you can hear this show that you may not have ever even heard of. Believe me, anywhere. If you happen to listen on Apple Podcasts, we invite you to leave a rate and review. Also for Spotify, please leave a rate and review. But if you listen on any other platform, we still want your feedback. Just shoot us an email at roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. That's roadtorediscoverypodcast@gmail.com. And we'll give you a shout out in a future episode. And who knows, you might even win some Road to Rediscovery podcast swag. That's right. All right, moving forward, my special guest has endured a traumatic experience as a parent whose son suffered a cancerous tumor that ruptured from a fall. And on top of this, my guest himself was diagnosed with cancer a month later. Can you believe that? Now, you know, in my mind, God puts us in situations that, with the right mindset, we can discover as opportunities, and He carries us through them. This applies to my guest as well. He now helps people realize the power of mindset mastering, a shift to a focus on positive outcomes for all aspects of life, wealth, relationships, and more. Ladies and gentlemen, let's please welcome Paul Giancarella to the show. Paul, welcome to the show. It's so great to have you here.
I'll tell you, Aubrey, it is not only good to be here, but I love the intro to your show. It's absolutely fantastic. Captivating. I love it. Yeah, this is great.
Well, thank you so much. I mean, we're thrilled to have you, you know, and I appreciate the thoughtfulness there for sure and the feedback. Man, we have a lot to unpack here because, yeah. I mean, just from what we shared, teeing up the intro, right? I mean, yeah. that piques a lot of questions in a lot of people's heads, especially, you know, for the listeners, right?
Yeah, it really does.
Yeah, so I wanted to know if you could just help us with, the story of your son is compelling. It's quite profound, I find it. And if you can walk us through this and tell us about that pivotal point in you and your son's situation when you discovered the virtues of shifting mindset.
Yeah, it was 2009, so it was 15 years ago, and mm-hmm. I was just reflecting on it mm-hmm. probably yesterday with my wife, which she doesn't really like to reflect on it too much, that story. We just dropped him off to the airport yesterday at 20 years old to spend a semester in Spain.
So, oh, wow.
Yeah. Excited. So he's doing well. He's doing very well. Things are well. And prior to his diagnosis in 2009, I remember being there for a friend who was going through some traumatic events. Mm-hmm. And I just said, geez, I don't know how he's doing it. And I remember praying specifically, Aubrey, mm-hmm. God, just give me the strength to endure and handle anything you bring my way, so to say.
Yes.
And lo and behold, it's, you know, Wednesday, first day of kindergarten in 2009, you know, and he's playing backwards on a chair out in the back deck waiting for the school bus. Mm-hmm. My other son's at school and my daughter is just 3 years old at the time. So my wife was kind of tending to her more so than him. And he fell off that chair down three steps and smashed his head onto the concrete. Oh, and she was all up in arms because his head was gushing blood. But sometimes it's worse than it is. And in this case, it was. The cut was cosmetic. The pediatrician said, listen, he's fine. He's going to school. You know what I mean? He's okay. So he went to school. 2 days later on a Friday, he mentioned to both my wife and I, he's like, you know, I just peed blood in the toilet. I said, whoa, something's wrong there. And we didn't try to get too alarmed. But what it turned out was I'm thinking it was a contusion or something that from the fall. Oh, and behold, what it was, Aubrey, the tumor on his kidney was ruptured because of that fall.
Oh, and my goodness.
Blood to his urine, which is a telltale sign of a Wilms tumor, kidney cancer in children. Thank God he fell, right? Thank God he fell.
Yeah, you didn't even know it was there.
No, we had no idea. The crazy thing is, my wife's concerned that he's going to lose his kidney, and the doctors had all said more than one, he probably wasn't functioning with a full kidney anyhow. He probably was only functioning with one kidney because he's 5 years old, and this tumor was big. You know, because I had no idea. When we got to the emergency room in the city hospital, which they sent us, and I thought it was just to handle the children better because he was crying about needles and this thing. I had no idea they knew at the local hospital that he had cancer or that it was a tumor. So I get to the emergency room and they show us the CAT scan results and they said, this is his healthy kidney and then this is his overgrown kidney. I said, oh, okay. I said, well, can he play soccer tomorrow? They said, well, let's go in the other room. So they escorted us into this other room, and I immediately turned to my wife. I said, things aren't good. She's like, what are you talking about? I said, we're in comfortable furniture. There's Kleenex boxes all around. Everything's bright.
Yeah.
I said, things aren't good. She's like, you're crazy. And sure enough, the doctor came in, and I said, my son's got cancer, doesn't he? He said, whoa, slow down. And they said, yes, he does, but he has a stage 1 Wilms tumor, which is very treatable.
Okay.
So at that point, our lives changed forever.
Yes.
But from that point, Aubrey, things just got better and better because subconsciously, my wife and I just accepted our fate and handled things in the best way that we could. Mm-hmm. We didn't hide the word cancer from him.
Right.
We didn't hide the word chemotherapy, treatments. Right. We were just matter of fact with it all.
Yeah.
Granted, a 5-year-old kid wants to get out of the hospital, doesn't want to have an operation, doesn't want any of this.
Right.
But we just handle things in stride. And for lack of a better understanding for us, we just did it. You know what I mean? We just you just go through those things. Sometimes when things are so traumatic, you handle it better than when you stub your toe.
Oh, sure.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So we just handled that. And it was something that when I got back from the hospital, I just couldn't wrap my head around. Well, I'm like, thank God he fell. Because, you know, in 3 weeks, 3 months, 3 years from then,
right,
he could have developed the cancer.
And it would have progressed. Along.
Yeah, yeah, it could have progressed. So it's just so at that time I'm thinking this, my daughter's climbing up a chair to get peanut butter out of the cupboard. I said, well, should I stop her? You know what I mean? So then I said, listen, you can't operate that way. You gotta do things practically and take care of your family the way they should be taken care of. And I said to the doctors, I want them to all get CAT scans. And they said, listen, no, they that's too much radiation for something that they don't know about. You know what I mean?
Right,
that you don't know for sure. You might be exposing them to cancer in a certain respect.
Oh, so I see.
That was the other thing. You know what I mean? So you want everything to be all taken care of for everybody.
Yeah.
So maybe a month into it, my wife's working a second job as a waitress. The kids are in bed. I'm watching Sunday night football. As a matter of fact, I think your team, the Bengals, were playing.
Oh, there we go. Okay.
So I had really no vested interest as a Patriots fan.
Sure.
But I'm watching the game, and I just stopped playing around with myself, checking myself. And lo and behold, I found something that was odd, hard, like a small pea, but it was like a BB on my testicle of all places. Well, I went to my urologist.
Yeah.
And he said, geez, Paul, you know what? That's a good find. I said, well, what do you mean by a good find? He's like, I think it's stage one seminoma, you know, testicular cancer. I'm going to get you an ultrasound in the morning. Oh, sure enough, he did. And that's exactly the way it turned out. Yeah. Well, that cancer diagnosis for myself, Aubrey, was a blessing because it's like a weight lifted from my son. He just felt normalized because my dad's got the same thing I have. We can go through this together type thing. Yes. Granted, his treatment was far more in depth than mine was. I had like two doses of chemo. He had 37,
but
he felt almost better. It was almost like there was a swagger to him. And I think God allowed these things to happen, not only for our family to thrive and to become better, but for everyone that knew us and everyone that I shared my story with, for them to reflect and to say, you know what, geez, the broken down car and the down payment on this or that is not that big of a deal.
No.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
It puts things in perspective. But we tend to make bigger deals of the little things in life than really the real big things, you know. And when those big things happen, it puts things into perspective. And it did for me personally, that I was able to deal with things much more calmly, much more tactfully, and much more rationally. I didn't say, well, what if this happens or this happens or this happens? I just went through it. I eulogized my son in my mind. So nothing worse than that can happen. So the prayer that I prayed again, give me the strength to handle my adversities. Mm. That's it. I didn't pray for him to be cured. I didn't pray for him to be healthy. I just prayed for that. So I didn't really set myself up for failure, if you will. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And then, you know, fast forward to 2021 is when I got really heavily into personal growth and development, mindset, and really all the likes of how I got through this cancer diagnosis with my son and myself. So that's how that transpired.
Yes, yes. Fabulous. Absolutely an incredible story, Paul. And you know, there are several anecdotes I just want to kind of pick out of what you shared with us for the listeners' benefit, if you don't mind. Mm-hmm. And on any of these that you wish to elaborate, please do if you like. But first off, the first thing I picked up from an insight, an anecdote, is you refuse to put yourself as a parent and as one diagnosed with cancer in a position of victimhood.
Yeah.
You refuse to be a victim. You refuse for your son to be a victim. That's one anecdote. And that right there, to me, involves mindset, right?
Yeah, oh, definitely.
Yeah.
Granted, I did it subconsciously. I wasn't actively, you know, going about doing it. But I just did it, you know what I mean? Instinctually.
So yes, instinctually. 100%, right? The second anecdote that I picked up was, you know, we all as parents know that, especially our children when they're toddlers, right? We need them to have some degree of reasonable falls, I'll call them, right? Reasonable tumbles and falls, just so they understand, you know, hey, you know, this is going to happen. You know, I need to pick myself back up. And when that happens, you know, the children, they depend on us so much, and you know, as they should, they're children. You know, they look to our response to see and understand how they should respond. And it may be subconsciously, it may be subliminally, I mean, but it's a natural instinctual response that toddlers have when they see how we respond. Yeah, so, you know, you see a toddler, they're walking around in the backyard and then they fall in a pothole, right? And they fall, they turn around. And if they look at the parent and the parent is panic stricken, then usually the child kind of responds that way, you know?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if you are calm,
they feed off us. Yeah.
Yeah. They feed off us 100%. And if you're calm about it, then they're usually calm about it too and understand that it happens. And they get up and kind of, you know, again, a reasonable fall, a tumble, right? Mm-hmm. Now, your son had something way beyond a reasonable fall. And days later, when he came to tell you and your wife about, you know, him urinating blood, you know, you knew in your mind, oh, this isn't right, something's wrong. But the persona that your wife and yourself have had over your son, you know, that speaks volumes. You have the mindset of just, you know, dealing with it. We know this is happening. How do we respond to it? What do we do about it? Who do we go to? What do we tell them? We need to know the full story, just all of the pieces in place to address the issue that your son mentioned about urinating blood. And that's what he saw, you know? I mean, they watch us do so much more than we know of us, you know? So I have to commend you for the way you responded to his fall, to what was found at the doctor's, as well as, you know, him telling you about your blood and his urination, you know? This is absolutely, I mean, it's incredible. And when you were diagnosed, like you said, it gave him maybe a sense of swagger. It was a huge, huge weight lifted off of him. And you were the model to see how to properly respond when you are going through something like this, such as cancer. And last thing I want to mention, Paul, you being realistic in how you pray, pray for the strength to get through this adversity, right? To overcome this adversity, whatever that looks like, right? Mm-hmm. We both come out healthy and we begin to live a life and thrive, or say the unmentionable or unthinkable happens, right? God, give me the strength to endure and overcome this adversity. So I commend you for all of that, Paul. That is an absolutely incredible story. And I think it sets the foundation for the next couple subtopics that we're going to cover.
Oh, yeah. It certainly does, right?
Yeah. And the last thing I want to mention real quick before my next question is, as a fellow cancer survivor of prostate cancer diagnosed in 2017, I want to commend you for your overcoming and surviving it, as well as your son, and things are going so well for you and your family today.
Yeah. Well, thank you. And I certainly will keep you in my prayers as well. And you know, prostate is a treatable form, thanks be to God, but you never know. You know what I mean? That's the thing. We're not foolproof in anything. And people really struggled initially when I was telling them that I was blessed to have been diagnosed, as well as my son, because they didn't understand what it meant until they really heard the story. And they're like, that's a great story. And someone had said, well, your son basically saved your life. I said, well, you could go to that length. He certainly saved me a lot of aggravation, because the cancer may have been more advanced in my testicle. You know what I mean?
Uh-huh.
So there are a lot of things to be thankful for. And I think Bob Proctor put it best, you know, no matter how bad things are, we can always be grateful for something.
100%. You know? Always. I mean, you know, as devastating as an event may be, you know, depending on how you look at things, there's an opportunity for a silver lining that could be seen in that. In quite of, I don't know, an ironic way, that tumble your son took, as much as it hurt him, I'm sure, saved his life.
Right.
You know? Right. No. It's incredible. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. And by the way, the long and short, I've totally survived prostate cancer. I had a prostatectomy, and it was fully contained and removed. So, I've had annual checkups, checking PSA levels. So, I'm very blessed and very grateful. Thank you. All right, so. Regarding children, and you can use your son as an example, I would think, but I want to know, when it comes to mindset shift, right, and thinking and focusing on positive outcomes, it's an incredible concept, and I'm wondering, can children in their formative years benefit from having being taught this? And I'm sure, I'm guessing there's a different way you would teach them versus teaching an adult, but can children benefit from this in their formative years, where they are like a sponge taking in things anyway?
Yeah. Aubrey, you touched on this already. You know, we're born, right, with genetics. You know what I mean? If my dad is tall, generally I'll be tall. You know what I mean? We certainly have physical traits and things to our parents. But one thing that's very important is our environment.
Yes.
You know what I mean? If I grew up in China with Chinese parents, I'd be speaking Chinese, right?
Right.
I may not look Chinese, but I would be doing things that they're doing. So it's not so much what we say to our children. Mm-hmm. It's how we act in front of our children and the behaviors that we manifest.
Yes.
In front of the children. That's kind of the key. And don't get me wrong, from 2009 to now, I haven't been the best example. But you know what I mean? There's been times when I've done things, you know, impatience or whatever have you, or aggravation. But the point is, when you have the grasp of healthy mindset, mindset mastery, personal growth and development, when you have that, you become more aware. So you become more aware of what you're doing wrong, so you can change it. You know, and I was reading today, as I've read a number of times, you know, there's only one thing with anyone that needs to change. And someone's like, oh, yeah, it's me. I got to change. Well, no, and it's not your behavior. Mm-hmm. It's your thinking.
Yes.
It's as simple as that. It starts with your thinking
that
then goes to a feeling and emotion that then leads to an action that produces a behavior, produces a result. You know what I mean? So we just need to change our thinking. And the question that you asked, well, how do you convey that to a child?
Right.
Is when you fix yourself and you change your thinking and have the correct mentality that you want and behavior that you've attributed to, they're going to feed off of that environment that you're creating. You know what I mean? Yes. I used to be very, 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 very impatient. Mm-hmm. I used to fly off the handle at the littlest things. You know what I mean? They're so volatile.
Yeah, yeah.
But since my diagnosis with bipolar in 2018, I was medicated with lithium. And that maintained my behavior, which I didn't realize was a problem. And again, it wasn't really a major problem.
Yeah.
It was something that, you know, it manifested itself. I had a major breakdown, so to speak, and I was diagnosed with this. But that's now a strength of mine because I know my limits, Aubrey. So my children learned to know their limits as adolescents when I was diagnosed. So they said, oh, geez, okay, so I need to make sure that, you know, I'm not going to end up like dad in the psychiatric hospital. What do I need to make sure that I, you know, do and don't do? And again, it's tough for them as well. But I got to feed them sometimes. Listen, you're making like this is the end of the world. You know, this certain grade that you got, or getting cut from a team, or having adversities with an opposite sex. I said, you got to put things in perspective and fix yourself.
Yes.
Then everything else was going to fix for you. And it will. And I never really believed that, truly. I believe the guy, my mentor, who was teaching me that, I did.
Yeah, yeah.
I really didn't believe it. But once it started to happen, Aubrey, I'm like, holy cow. It's all us. We control it all. Everything.
Wow. That's I love it. That's amazing. Mm-hmm. And what I'm hearing from you, Paul, is that, you know, in pursuit of having a positive mindset or a mindset of positive outcomes, mindset shift in perspective when it comes to things that, let's say, don't go our way, or we have aspirations to be better, whether it's a better earner, a better partner, a better parent, what have you. Right. It takes a realistic approach and being real with yourself. To me, it sounds like it takes some degree of accountability, because you have to understand where your current condition is in order to and accept that where you are realistically in your current condition, and accept it in order to build and become better. It sounds like it takes that realistic approach, and that starts in the mind, as you say.
Well, right. In other words, Napoleon Hill, he wrote the famous book, Think and Grow Rich.
Yes.
You know, he said in that book, nobody is ready for a thing until they believe they can have it. It's not a matter of just a mere hope or wish.
Yeah.
You have to believe in what you aspire to have.
Yeah.
You know, society's just so dumbed down now as they go through their 9-to-5s. This is their life. This is where it's going to be. I might get a little bit better. I might get a little bit worse. But for the most part, I'm in this window. You can 10 times what you want right now just by being convinced and you believe that. And I tell people all the time that, you know, for example, Aubrey, you don't have to believe it. But you have to believe that I believe it if we're going to have a meaningful one-on-one relationship of me helping you. And that's really all it boils down to. And then once you go through the studying process of this, you understand that it starts to make sense. And again, I'm not trying to get you something that you don't want.
Right.
You're getting something that you truly want, whether it's to make the basketball team or whether it's to get, you know, better grades or get into a different college, have a great job, have better relationships, you know, your health, your physical health, your mental health, any of that stuff. It's something that if you truly want and believe and don't have a limited ceiling on, you can go and get anything. It's truly remarkable. Just think of all of our, you know, people that even now and before of us, like Henry Ford's of the world. You know, who was it? Sir Edmund Hillary. Mm-hmm. You know, this guy was crazy.
Yeah.
He tried to climb Mount Everest in 1951 and failed with his guide.
Yeah.
So what did he do? He went back and did it again next year in 52 and still failed. People really thought he was psychotic, which to agree, he may be. He may have been, but he was determined. And that's what all these special athletes are. So on the third attempt, he made it, you know, and then he accomplished that. And by the way, most people that die on Everest die on the way down because they're not locked in.
Oh, amazing.
They reach the pinnacle and then they're like, all right, let's get out of here. You know, again, I'm being
right. Sure. Yeah.
But that's the thing. You need to be locked in at all times and be aware of what your surroundings are. You know, there's opportunities all the time. I hear it from a lot of my kids a lot. Oh, that person's, you know, everything they touch turns to gold. They have the Midas touch. Everything, the rich keep getting richer. They do because they're presented with opportunities and they make the best of those because they're aware of them.
Yes.
And the bad things happen to people because they constantly are in that realm of negativity. More bad's going to happen. It's the universal law of cause and effect.
100%.
Whatever you put out comes back.
100%. There's that element of energy, right?
Yes.
And what you put out into the world, seen and unseen, you know, what you put out, you get back. You know, in a lot of cases, it can be exponentially. You know, Paul, I've always had a phrase that I would say that the times in our lives that we see that may appear most dire can be the times in our lives that can most inspire.
Yeah.
And, you know,
I love that.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah. And so it's true. You have to have that mindset and look into those opportunities. And of course, you know, it's not easily attainable depending on one's upbringing and one's way of thinking. One's way of thinking may be in part of how and what they've seen in their environment growing up, you know. And so how can we, or with you and the people you've worked with, how can we break those limiting beliefs if we have them realize our true potential?
It's hard. You know, just to kind of go off of what you were saying, how many times did you hear your dad, your mom say, money doesn't grow on trees, you know?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So when you spit that out, what are you saying? Your relationship with money is not good. It's not prospering.
That's right.
So, you know, and I'm not saying go out and spend everything you want and roll up the credit card bill.
Right.
The point is, it's your mentality on that. So how can you go about exercising this is to sit down, truly sit down and write exactly what you would want out of life. And that may take a couple weeks because you may want other things and certain things. You're like, yeah, that's another thing I want. I want this.
How do I get it?
Once you have it down, then you can go about how to get it, so to speak. And you don't have to know the how. You just have to have those big whys, right? Why do I want that? You know, why do I want to go through this? Or why do I want to do this? So I can have these particular things. And then once you study this every day, like I do, it becomes just as normal as anything else. You know, it really does.
Yeah. Yeah. No, that's true. That's true. And and one part of that that you kind of alluded to, and I'd like for us to maybe unpack a little bit more, Paul, is, you know, I've talked with a lot of people who, in fact, touching on football again, I listened to former Hall of Fame running back Emmitt Smith of the Cowboys. He was on a podcast, and they were talking about, you know, how does he prepare for a game? And he said, literally, he sits in the locker room and he visualizes every detail of the game as far as where they are on the field, when he gets handed the ball, what direction he runs in. He visualizes it. And so my question to you, Paul, is, how does visualization play a part in our focus on positive outcomes?
Yeah, that's the main part of the equation. You know what I mean? The vehicle that you're driving has an engine, but you know what I mean? That steering wheel is just as important as anything else. And having that vision, if you will, you really need to first visualize. You know, I think it was Walt Disney. He had a vision of what he wanted. He wasn't able to see it to its completion.
Right, right.
But he had that vision. And that's everything in life is done twice. You know what I mean? Whether it's this mouse here.
Yeah.
You figure it out in your mind, and then you do it in reality.
Yes.
So you have to constantly visualize things. But what people don't want to do is sometimes you have to visualize it on paper. If you have a goal and you know what you want, here, write it down, because that creates more creativity, more thoughts, more energy. And that is a good thing to help you visualize, because it's not easy to sit in that locker room and visualize the game. You can get distracted very easily, just like meditation.
Sure. Of course.
You know, you can go all over the place. But but visualization is so very important. J.C. Penney, you've heard this before. They asked him how his eyesight is. He's like, it's continuing to get worse. But my vision's never been better. And that's thing, you know?
Love it.
That's the thing. Our vision can continually can grow if we allow it, if we feed it the right nutrients, if you will.
Yeah. No, that makes a lot of sense. It makes a lot of sense, Paul. So I want to talk about goal setting for a minute. You've touched on goal setting in explaining this the previous question and the one before that, but would love to hear your insights on the types of goals we should set ourselves. You know, everyone has a different mindset. I've known some people who, when they latch on to something new that they enjoy and that they benefit, they're all in. They go full bore. Right. And so when they go full bore and they're so excited about it, goals that they would set that's related to it may be a bit lofty, you know. And then I have other people I've talked to who have maybe small incremental goals. And, you know, sometimes, you know, I may even ask them, like, you're making that a goal? Shouldn't that just be part of the task that you do?
Yeah.
And they're like, no, this is a goal. I have to, you know, I can't look past this until I achieve it. What is your thought on the types of goals we set ourselves when it comes to bettering ourselves in any aspect?
Yeah. Well, what's funny about this industry that I'm in this personal growth and development industry, is that everything's regurgitated from one person or another.
You
know, it really is. And then you make it your own.
Yeah.
And you make it your own. So for me, I was always the SMART goal mentality. SMART as an acronym, you know, one of the.
Oh, yeah.
One of them is realistic.
Goals. Yep.
Well, with Bob Proctor, he took that realistic and threw it out the window. No, don't make it realistic. Make it what you want it to make. Because, you know, the goals of, you know, Roger Bannister, who broke the 4-minute mile, and Sirdman Hillary and Henry Ford, all their goals were not realistic.
Yeah,
they weren't realistic goals, but it was passion driven. It's something that they truly wanted.
Yeah,
and you alluded to that before. Is if something that, you know, motivation gets you started, but discipline finishes the race. You know what
100%,
I mean? 100%. You want to be motivated, but you also want to be disciplined. And,
yes.
And that's the thing. So what I've come to learn from this industry is that I set what I want. If I want certain things, I don't budget myself financially.
Right, right.
I budget myself from a standpoint on what do I need to do to afford the car, the house, the trips, the traveling expenses, all that stuff.
Yes.
What do I have to do to get to that? So now that we have that goal, okay, the next question is, okay, how are we going to do it?
Yeah.
And the how becomes much easier to do, because once you have that in your mind and you're disciplined and determined to doing it and you've made the decision, it all comes to us. We start attracting the ways. Maybe not on our time frame that we want it to come.
Right, right, right. Comes.
You know what I mean? There's people out there that have made 10 times, 20 times quantum leaps in 6 months. You know, some people might be going on 2-3 years saying, okay, what's going on? You know what I mean? It all happens differently, and you all have to understand we have to figure it out with our belief system and our mindset. We have to really study that, but it's all different. So the way that I based myself on your question about goal setting is I put that big goal out there. I write it down. I put a date. Doesn't really matter, but I put a date on it when it's going to be accomplished. And then from there, all the other goals fall under that umbrella. So as I travel for that big goal, I'm getting all these batons or wands or benefits from this. You know what I mean? I can't begin to tell you that, you know, what I went through from 2018 to 2020 with my mental illness, I couldn't, you know, I was so socially anxiety driven that I couldn't even talk to anyone. You know, now that's not me. You know what I mean? I'm a very extroverted person. I'll go and probably can tell.
Yeah.
But the point is, if you told me that would I be speaking in front of people, would I be speaking on stages, I would say, yes, I do. I definitely would have told you that.
Yeah. But
you can't just leave it at that. You can't just throw the dream out there. You have to work toward it and really manifest that. You know what I mean? I can tell you all day long, I think of ways to become a better husband and father.
Yeah.
But that means nothing unless I'm acting on it.
Right.
So it's a matter of acting. Even imagination, that's the key. We can't think of something and think. I used to immediately think of ways I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
I couldn't.
Yeah.
I got bipolar or I'm just not entrepreneurial minded. I'm not that type of person. Well, then what are you preparing yourself for? You're setting yourself up to not have that. But if you are determined in your mind to get that, you will. But we can never outperform our self-image. That's why we need to constantly build up our self-image, and whether it be our self-confidence, our self-esteem, but our image that we hold of ourselves, we need to be confident, not arrogant, but confident in that. And we will really ultimately get that. So I'm not here to help people set goals.
Right.
Do that. But my objective with people is to achieve their goals. That's the key. Because not only do you get what you want, but you become happy. Doesn't everybody want to be happy and want joy, not just pleasure? You know, pleasure is temporary, but joy, happiness, that's permanent. And it's a decision, too.
It is a decision. It's a choice.
I may not be happy one day, but you know what? If I'm going on a podcast, I'm going to make sure I am.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's a choice, right?
Of course.
Yeah, yeah, it's definitely a choice.
And people make the choices all day long.
They sure do. You know,
it's not a matter of right and wrong. It's a matter of being better. We can all be better. Whether you're right or wrong, whether the Bengals are a good team or the Patriots, it doesn't matter. It's can they be better?
Can they be better?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Can we be better? And that's
the key. Yeah. No, it totally is.
I'm sweating over here. Yeah. I'm passionate.
Hey, you're on fire, man. You're on fire. And so joy, setting big goals, helping and working with people to achieve those goals. You know, I mean, and all of this is driven by passion. You know, it's some of the good stuff, some of the best stuff that makes life worth living, Paul. Yeah. I mean, it's really incredible. And I hear the passion in your voice and I feel the passion in your energy. So I know it's genuine. I know it's real. And I know you're very, very, very authentic. I'd love to take a slight shift. And it's almost like you're reading my mind in terms of the sequence we're going here in. But I want to talk about how we shift our mindset to better ourselves when it comes to relationships and how we interact with others, whether it's to be a better partner or to be a better parent or to be a better worker, maybe a better son. Or daughter, you know. So in my view, and I could be wrong, but in my view, this is more of a plural effort in achieving the improvement of being a better in our relationship. And the reason why I say that is because I don't think it's just well, I'll put it this way. We might have an idea of what we're looking to achieve to become a better partner, but it may not align with the one that we are, you know, our significant other or the ones that we are interacting with in what they feel we need to improve on to become a better partner or a better parent or a better worker. Is there some push and pull, some give and take, some dialogue that you would recommend that you involve someone outside of yourself, so to speak, in helping you attain that improvement in your relationships?
I thank you for saying that, actually, because I was from the firm belief to make a relationship work, you know, it's 50-50. You got to have, you know, to negotiate with a contract, you got to have two parties that are willing to work and bend with each other. Yeah. But then I came to the school of Bob Proctor and Darren Hardy and Les Brown, and they're saying, listen, you know, your responsibility in a relationship is not 50-50. It's 100% zero. You give 100% regardless of what they're giving. So if I want to strengthen my marriage, it's not dependent on my wife. It's dependent on me and how I act and behave. Because what the way that I change myself for the better, she will feed off of that. Now, don't get me wrong. It'd be nice if she, you know, it would be nice if she bought into the fact that I do personal growth and development. Yeah. But she didn't. She did not. Mm-hmm. That was tough for me to. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I was at odds. Here I am with my soulmate. She doesn't buy into the fact that I'm bettering myself. She didn't think that until you break through. So there's some times when it takes a lot, but you can benefit a relationship, whether it's a coworker or it's a child or it's a adolescent son or a spouse. Mm-hmm. You can benefit from that by changing you and your mindset, your belief in making yourself a better person in that relationship, you know, and it's a matter of just doing the things that you need to do. Yes. You know, like walking by the sink full of dishes and I got to go walk the dog. I can't wash the dishes right now. But by doing those dishes, you know what I mean? I'm giving into that relationship, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
My wife kind of calls that foreplay. You know what I mean?
Sure, sure.
Me doing chores. That's foreplay.
mine does too. Absolutely. You know what I mean? Yeah.
So the point is, when I make these decisions and act on this behavior, Aubrey, I don't worry or I'm not generally concerned about what they're going to put into the equation or how they're going to make this contract work. It's all me. And that's why a lot of marriage counselors only need to meet with one party that's truly worked up to make the relationship work. No, it doesn't always work, nothing always works.
That's
but
true.
If you truly have something in your mind, things are going to work out. You know what I mean? Don't get me wrong. My son could have died.
Yeah.
My son could have died from cancer. Yeah. I still would have to have been, you know, it doesn't give me the excuse to be miserable all the time.
No.
To be negative. But we as a society said, well, it's okay. He lost his son. What do you expect? You know? Well, you know what I mean? Mm. That's the thing. It's like these twins that grew up.
Yeah.
Father was an alcoholic, died of alcoholism. One became an alcoholic. He said, what do you expect? My dad was an alcoholic. The other one became prosperous and a Wall Street Journal, top whatever he was.
Yeah.
He's like, what do you expect? My dad was an alcoholic. I went the opposite way.
Yeah.
So it's all choices, right? So it's
choices.
It's the decisions that we make that will make our relationships better and bring new ones and foster and nurture new ones.
Yes.
As well. Because what I get excited about, Aubrey, is speaking to you, to your audience right now. Speaking to your audience right now for them to start to think and say, all right, this guy's pretty whacked out. He's sweating like bullets, but he makes a little bit of sense there. You know what I mean? It's all about me. I don't need anybody else. I don't need anyone else. It's just my thought process.
Yes.
You just start with the thoughts. And it may be just that. You know, keep your same behavior. Just start thinking about those thoughts. And then really start to then encompass it into everything else. You'd be surprised. Because that's why a lot of people that lose weight, say 50 pounds, end up gaining it back because they change their behavior.
Right.
They don't change their mentality or their thought process. Mm. You know what I mean? You have to live the way a 50-pound less person lives or a $150,000 more a year person lives,
right,
or whatever it may be, or a millionaire. How is that person living? You have to live that now.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? To get where you want to go.
Amazing. Absolutely incredible insights. I mean,
well, thank you.
Yeah, you've shared some incredible insights and really broke down the importance of you counting on you for making this change and the energy that feeds when you make these changes to become a better partner, the energy that feeds off of your significant other in response. Whether they know they're responding to it or not, and that's just affirmation that you are making and moving in the right direction with these improvements to become a better partner or better worker, right? Just an absolute plethora and an abundance of insights, Paul, that you've shared with the listeners. The incredible story of you and your son, and just the way that God has worked in your life, in your family's lives, to help you realize things, and then of course taking what inspired you from your experience to help inspire others in shifting their mindset, focusing on positive outcomes, having that mindset mastery, and helping them, quite frankly, develop a new normal in how they think, which obviously helps them catapult into just a different quality of life. Paul, this has been an absolute delight, sir. And I would love if you can share with the listeners how they can follow you, learn more about your great work, and maybe pick up some more incredible insights.
Sure. Yeah. No, the way my policy works as a speaker and a coach, it's not a matter of, you know, me charging someone to have a conversation. So
right.
I welcome people to engage with me. And it doesn't have to be through the phone, it could be through text, it could be through social media, email, whatever have you, because sometimes someone wants to be somewhat anonymous and have a question because they're just uncomfortable with something and they just wanted to bounce it off.
Yeah.
And that's where it starts. That's really where it starts. And again, I understand people's boundaries. So I have the social media channels that I'll share with you. You can put on the show notes. Whether it be Facebook, Instagram, LinkedIn, YouTube, those are the four major ones that that I'm on. And then I really developed my text line. It's a cell phone number that I leave it to anyone to text in whatever's going through their life that they would want help with. I've helped a lot of people. I've helped a lot of people that haven't become clients, believe it or not. You know what I mean? Because sometimes someone just needs a tweak here or there.
Right,
you know,
right.
You don't want to go through a whole realm of 6-month training or whatever.
The whole curriculum, right? Yeah.
You know what I mean? And the thing is, sometimes they'll taste that and they'll see it and they'll come back eventually.
Of course.
But ultimately, the more people I can help, the more help I'm going to receive, whether it be mental, physical, financial, vocational, whatever have you, you know? My mindset led me to you, really. You know what I mean? Because I said, oh, I'm not doing these podcast interviews. I'm not. I don't have the time. I don't have the financial backing to do that. But you know what? You do it. You make a decision. And you know what? It's been so uplifting to me because I've met some great, great people such as yourself. Mm. It's awesome. Now, I have friends now. You may just consider me an acquaintance, but I consider you a friend.
No, not at all. I completely consider you a friend, Paul. I mean, we have gone, and I know we've just barely scratched the surface in what you share with others and your experiences and so forth. But we have gone through some initial depths that, you know, to me is just a true, solid, genuine connection. Yeah. And I hope we can keep this connection going because I would love to have you on the show at a future date.
Oh, definitely.
If you decide to write a book, hey, please let me know. Come back on the show, right?
For sure. Yeah. But this is your audience base. This is your show topic, so to speak, is really getting things, you know, discovering things, becoming better. That's what it's all about, right? You know,
to be happy. It truly is. How can we become better versions of ourselves? And can we hear stories from other human beings from around the world that we don't even know when we are at the end of our rope and we don't think that there's any chance for us? And we put ourselves in the shoes of someone who's sharing their story and realize, you know what? I can make a change. I can make a change. And that's what you have demonstrated for us today, Paul. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, sir. We are going to make sure that we have those episode, those show notes, including your links, as well as your text line, so that people can connect with you, follow you while listening to this wonderful conversation. Paul, once again, thank you so much for coming on the show, sir.
You're more than welcome, and thank you for having me, Aubrey. You know, this has been, I think, the beginning of a great relationship, nonetheless. You know, whether it be talking one time a year or not, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
This was nice. Seriously, this was nice.
Well, I think so, likewise as well, and I hope it becomes more frequent than that. And we are going to absolutely make an effort to keep that connection going, keep that dialogue going. I do see you as a true friend, Paul. So very thrilled to have you on. And I want to thank you all for tuning in and listening. And you know what? You may feel like this at times, but in our daily struggles and adversities, we're never alone. Hope is always around the corner. And I humbly ask that you please share this show with someone you know, you love, who needs motivation, inspiration, and support. You know, when it comes right down to it, we're all just roadies on this journey of life. And it sure feels good having you on the road with me. Thanks again for listening. We'll chat again soon.
We really hope you enjoyed this episode of The Roads Rediscovered. We'd love to hear from you. Shoot us an email at roadsrediscoverypodcast@gmail.com and leave us any questions or comments you may have.